This episode is made possible by Nielsen. Sharpen your media planning with Nielsen's Upfronts New Fronts Guide. Whether it's linear TV or streaming, Nielsen helps you optimize reach and impact. Visit Nielsen.com for more information.
Similarly, chatbots are considered limited risk, and on the whole, they probably are. But just labeling that something is not human isn't necessarily going to negate the potential risk involved with that chatbot.
Hey gang, it's Tuesday, March 12th. Karina, Yuri, and listeners, welcome to Behind the Numbers Daily, an e-marketer podcast made possible by Nielsen. I'm Marcus. Today I'm joined by two people. The first of those two is Principal Analyst, who covers everything advertising, media, and technology based in New Jersey. It's Yuri Wormser.
Hey Marcus, how are you doing?
Hey fella, very well. How are we today?
I'm doing great.
Very good. We're also joined by one of our senior analysts based on the south coast of England, who covers retail and e-commerce with a particular focus on the UK and Western Europe. It's Karina Perkins.
Hi, Marcus. Thanks for having me back.
Of course, today's topic is about EU AI rules and how they will shape US regulation. But we, of course, start with today's fact. And Karina, this one's kind of for you. It's a UK fact, some facts about Buckingham Palace. So, according to the royal website, Buckingham Palace has served as the official London residence of the UK sovereign since 1837, and today it is the administrative headquarters of the monarch. Although in use for the many official events and receptions held by the king, the state rooms at Buckingham Palace are open to visitors every summer. Buckingham Palace has nearly 800 rooms, including 188 staff bedrooms, 92. Imagine how cool it'd be to say you like worked and slept there. It'd be cool, wouldn't it? Probably for a week and then you'd be like, oh.
Yeah.
92 offices, 78 bathrooms, 52 royal and guest bedrooms, 19 staterooms. The palace measures 830,000 square feet, so it'd be 140 times larger than the average American home. It's got everything.
Do you know how many times larger it would be than the average UK home?
Probably a billion. Yeah. I couldn't find a good average for, but our houses are small.
Much smaller.
Yeah. The palace has everything it needs to be its own self-sufficient village. It's got a post office, movie theatre, police station, clinic.
A police station?
Yeah, why has it got a police? I guess probably just a place where the police hang out. Right. No one's going down and like reporting, ah, the prince was yelling at me again.
Yeah.
Oh. We'll go and talk.
Surely they've got their own police, or they are the police.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, because she could do, she can, yeah, she's on everything. Well, I guess she'll be on everything eventually.
Yeah.
Well, her face, the Queen's face is on everything. Charles's face will soon be on everything. But if you're on the money, you know, you can do what you want. Over 50,000 people visit the palace each year as guests to state banquets, lunches, dinners, receptions, and garden parties. I'm yet to be invited.
My mum's been to a garden party.
What?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Without me?
Mm.
Oh, how'd she get invited? And how can I?
She used to work for a charity that was
I'm not that
supported
good.
By Prince Edward. Yeah.
I'm a person. Okay. All right.
One day, Marcus. One day.
All right. Yeah. Probably not. Anyway, today's real topic, how the EU's AI Act is and isn't informing US regulation. In today's episode, first in the lead, we'll cover how AI is being regulated across the pond. I sound English, so you think I'm in the UK. But by across the pond, I mean the UK because I'm in America. Then for another news, we'll discuss the era of bad GPTs and Amex introducing a card-linked buy now, pay later offering. But we start, of course, with the lead, and we're talking about what's going on across the pond in Europe when it comes to AI legislation. Towards the end of last year, the EU bloc of 27 countries reached a landmark deal on the world's first comprehensive AI regulation. And notes Kia Kokhlacheva of Axios. The AI Act, as it's called, categorizes AI uses according to four risk levels, with increasingly stringent restrictions, the greater the potential risks. What's in the law? Well, Ryan Heath of Axios did a fantastic job of outlining some of the main parts, so I didn't have to read it. So what do we have here? We've got the EU law bans several uses of AI. Think bulk scraping of facial images and most emotion recognition systems in workplace and educational settings. And number two, it bans controversial social scoring These are evaluations of compliance or trustworthiness of citizens. Number three, it restricts facial recognition technology in law enforcement to a handful of uses like IDing victims of terrorism, human trafficking, and kidnapping. AI companies will need to submit details of the training data they used to build these models. Operators of systems creating manipulated media will have to disclose that to users. And another point here, providers of high risk, what they call high risk AI, especially in essential public services, will be subject to reporting and have to make data available to the public and human rights impact assessments as well. Penalties for this, companies violating the rules could face fines of $38 million, that's 35 million euros. I don't know if it's per violation or total, I'm not sure how that works, or a fine of between 1.5% to 7% of global sales. EU national governments are exempt from some aspects of the law for military or defense uses of AI. And finally, the EU is still ironing out some of the details, and they also still have to vote on the law. That's a formality at this point. It seems like everyone's going to say yes. The rules won't take effect, though, until 2025 at the earliest. But Karina, I'll start with you. Which part of this legislation do you think, or parts, do you think are most important?
I think it's probably the part where it just completely bans AI systems that pose an unacceptable risk. So those are systems that it deems to contravene EU values and poses a threat to people's fundamental rights. So as you mentioned, that's things like untargeted scraping of facial images from the internet or CCTV footage to create facial recognition databases, or social scoring, or AI systems that are manipulating human behavior to circumvent their free will. So I think actually that kind of total ban on those sorts of systems is probably the most important part of it.
Mm-hmm. Yuri, what about for you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that total ban's important. I think the tiering of the risk level and also by size. So the general AI models that are going to be most regulated are the extremely large ones, and it really probably is limited to like OpenAI's GPT-4 and Google's Gemini, giant models like that. And open source models seem to have a much lighter requirement level. So that's an interesting distinction as well.
Mm-hmm. What's missing? What's the greatest omission from this EU AI Act?
I think the thing that concerned me the most was the very light touch that they're applying to deep fakes. So they would come under the limited risk category. And that's just some kind of regulation around transparency. So it requires creators to be transparent. So anyone who creates or disseminates deepfake has to disclose that it's artificial and provide some information on how, you know, what technique was used to produce it. And I don't think that labeling it is always going to be enough to kind of combat the potential harm that they can cause. And there's also still some uncertainty around the kind of legal liability and exactly who would be responsible in the case of misuse.
Right.
Similarly,
and also you can get rid of watermarks, right? I believe it's pretty easy to remove them.
And if
like
someone's using deepfakes for kind of malicious purposes, they're the most likely to then not sort of ignore the law, aren't they? Yeah, I think, and similarly, chatbots are considered limited risk, and on the whole, they probably are. But just labeling that something is not human isn't necessarily going to negate the potential risk involved with that chatbot. Mm-hmm. So I think there was a case in Belgium where a man committed suicide after conversing with a chatbot who encouraged him to sacrifice himself to save the planet. So, you know, there are risks out there that even if people know they're not conversing with a human, that doesn't necessarily negate all of the risks. So I think that kind of minimum safeguard for AI systems isn't quite addressed by the legislation as it stands.
Wasn't there a case, wasn't that the chap in the UK who, speaking of Buckingham Palace, he broke into Buckingham Palace and he had a crossbow and he was trying to get to the Queen, because it's 2021. And they said, you know, why are you doing this? And I believe that was the case where he said he'd been talking to a chatbot and the chatbot had helped to convince him that he could do anything he wanted, pretty much. He'd been asking it questions and it'd been saying, yeah, you're the best. You're able to do whatever you want. And yet he wasn't able to distinguish between, and it led to some pretty grave consequences.
Yeah. And as far as I understand, the AI Act doesn't put kind of guardrails around that. It assumes that if people know that they're not conversing with a human, that will mitigate the harm. I don't think it does.
Yeah. Yuri, what's missing from this for you?
Well, I mean, some of it is just part of the process, and the specific regulations, specific requirements, those are going to be stipulated by the AI office that it has to be formed. The EU has to hire people for that office, has to set it up, and then they have to set the rules. And, you know, with GDPR, a few years ago, it was those rules were the details in those rules were everything turned on. Until those rules are laid out in detail, there's not going to be a lack of clarity exactly what's expected of companies. And I think that at this point is still missing.
Mm. One of my biggest concerns here was how quickly these rules can become out of date, because the rules won't take effect until 2025 at the earliest. Jess Weatherbed of The Verge thinks it might be mid-2026 by the time we see everything within the AI Act regulated. So that's at least 9 months if you're talking start of 2025 from today, maybe over 2 years. From 9 months to 2 years, these things could actually completely go into effect. And how quickly will things change from now until then? And how different will the landscape be? Knowing ChatGPT came out just over a year ago, and the EU has been working on this version of the AI rules for the last 3 years. So are you surprised that nothing's going to happen until at least 9 months in the future?
I'm not surprised, because this is just the pace at which regulation happens. Right. And I think that's the biggest challenge with regulating something like AI, where the technology is developing so quickly. Regulations, you can't really keep pace with it. And it's where in some instances, I think we're going to be relying on existing regulations, so things like GDPR. But that's obviously not going to cover all of the issues that might arise from the technology.
Yeah, I just wonder how much of this is going to be invalid. What share of this by then? Let's turn our attention to the US, because a lot of the time Europe will set the standard for regulation on certain things. And then the US, often California first, will peek over the pond, say, what are you up to? Oh, interesting. That looks good. And adopt some of those practices in the US, in a singular state. And then that kind of spreads throughout the country. We've seen that with a lot of different types of rules, GDPR, privacy rules, things like that. And so turning our attention to America, Kim McCrail of The Journal writes, countries around the world actually have struggled with whether and how to regulate AI. She first points to, reminds us that Chinese regulators earlier this year issued rules dealing with Gen AI. In the US, the Biden administration in October issued an executive order on AI safety that we covered at the time. At the start of the year, the White House said the AI regulation process is well underway, releasing an update to AI regulations following President Biden's 2023 executive order. I believe that was a 100-page document. Ben Sherry of Inc. explains the updated rules include the following. One, the Defense Production Act will force developers of powerful AI systems to send the government information about the results before the new version gets released to the general public. Number two, the government will hire more AI experts across federal agencies. And number three, a set of responsible AI use guidelines, like designating a chief AI officer, establishing internal mechanisms for working on large-scale AI projects with multiple stakeholders, and conducting AI impact assessments before and after experimenting with the technology. So a set of guidelines being issued. But Yuri, I'll start with you. What do you make of where the US currently stands with its efforts to regulate AI?
Well, it's way behind Europe. I mean, so the guidelines set forth by the Biden administration are mostly about US agencies. You really need Congress to pass a law for a full regulation, or states. But, you know, something as complicated as this, it's really probably going to come down to a federal law. But in the meantime, existing regulations in Europe cover some of the facets of AI regulation already. I think in the US, some privacy laws, the FTC and courts will probably have some hand in what companies can do through, you know, just rulings on copyright infringement or use of private data, or personal data. So I think even before you get federal regulations, you're going to get some court rulings and some FTC rulings on this. But where we're behind is just the federal regulation.
Mm. You mentioned copyright. Stay tuned for an episode coming out March 19th, where myself, Yuri, and Evelyn Mitchell-Wolf will be talking about AI and copyright and whether copyright laws could actually torpedo a lot of the Gen AI hype at the moment. Karina, what do you make of where the US stands in comparison to the EU?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with Yuri that the US is way behind. It's taking a more cautious approach. I think it's kind of concerned that stringent rules could make US companies non-competitive. I think it's really interesting how far behind it is given the difference in investment in AI. So I saw a Dealroom study that shows that in the US between 2019 and 2023, there was $23.8 billion in generative AI VC investment. And in Europe, it is 1.8 billion.
Wow.
Yeah. So I thought that was an interesting point.
Yeah, that is a lot more.
Interestingly as well, I mean, the UK also is taking a similarly more light-handed approach.
Mm-hmm.
It's very concerned about kind of stifling innovation and introducing a whole new regulatory mm-hmm. regime. So it's also not going to be as stringent as the mm-hmm. EU. The EU is not afraid of imposing stringent legislation.
Yeah.
So it doesn't surprise me that it's leading on this.
Yeah, well, we talked about the EU. It's easy to forget that the UK is no longer part of the EU. And so where does the UK kind of stand? Where do you think they're going to fall in terms of getting something passed and how strict that legislation will be?
So they're not at the moment. There was a white paper on a pro-innovation approach to AI regulation, which was presented to Parliament in, I think, March 2023. Mm. And that doesn't propose the creation of new laws or kind of any empowerment of a new regulator, but it's empowering existing regulators with responsibility for establishing sector-based approaches to the way that AI is impacting on their individual sectors.
Okay.
So it's taking a very different approach to the EU.
I thought they'd be further along. I'm quite surprised by that. But I guess they probably thought that they were going to just use the EU's version.
No, I don't think they did. I just think the government is afraid of taking a kind of anti-technology approach. It's very pro-technology. It's very pro-innovation. I don't think it wants to stifle that.
Okay.
But yeah, it's definitely taking at the moment a lighter touch to AI than the EU.
Okay. So I guess, yeah, we left the EU in January 2020. So yeah, I thought that maybe we were just thinking, we'll use the EU version of rules, but they didn't start working on those until, I guess, the year after. All right, folks, that's all we've got time for the lead. Time now for the second half of the show, Today in Other News. Welcome to the era of banned GPTs, and American Express brings a card-linked buy now, pay later offering to the UK. Story one, welcome to the era of banned GPTs, writes Belle Lynn of The Journal. She notes that a new crop of evil ChatGPT cousins called things like Fraud GPT are being made to turbocharge phishing emails and create better deepfakes. In one example, Miss Lynn points out that earlier this year, a Hong Kong multinational company employee handed over $25 million to an attacker who posed as the company's chief financial officer on an AI-generated deepfake conference call. The South China Morning Post reported, citing Hong Kong police. Yuri, what is your greatest concern when it comes to these bad GPTs?
Yeah, I mean, we've all been through training where we look for phishing attacks, you know, misspellings and so forth. I mean, the first obvious thing is just that the language is going to be better. So it's going to be much harder to identify not just the language, but the techniques will be much more aware of malware identifying software can evade them. But more nefariously, spear phishing attacks. So attacks that are meant to impersonate someone or like directed towards an individual with individual information, those are going to become a lot easier to do. And that's what happened in Hong Kong, where someone was impersonating, a bot was impersonating another executive. And that just becomes super hard to identify and prevent. So it's really dangerous.
Yeah. The thing that leapt out to me was that Gen AI really turns on the fire hose, because the article is pointing out phishing emails grew by over 1,000%. And it's like that. It's not like there were no phishing emails before generative AI came about. There were plenty. There were enough. And now it's grown by over 1,000% in a 12-month period, starting when ChatGPT was publicly released, with an average of 31,000 phishing attacks sent every day, according to an October 2023 report by cybersecurity vendor SlashNext. Story two. American Express brings card-linked buy now, pay later offering to the UK to capture the growing demand for installment payments, writes our senior payments analyst, Grace Broadbent. How does the Planet, as it's called, Plan It card work? Grace explains that cardholders can select a transaction or an amount from their recent statement to pay in installments across 3, 6, or 12 months. Users are charged a fixed monthly fee, but pay no interest on the balance of the installment plan, she notes. But Karina, what do you make of this new offering from Amex that apparently got launched in the US 6, 7 years ago, but is now in the UK?
So I don't think it's surprising that they've launched this at all. We've seen massive growth in buy now, pay later adoption in the UK. Part of that's been driven by the cost of living crisis, but I think also players such as Klarna are really pushing it in the UK. Buy now, pay later volumes are expected to account for 12.1% of UK e-commerce payments by 2025. So it's really fast growing, and a lot of people, especially younger generations, are using buy now, pay later instead of credit cards because it's interest-free for that kind of installment period. And I think that the credit card companies are now really having to catch up with that and offer something similar.
It seems like buy now, pay later is nearly as popular in the UK as it is the US. We don't have UK numbers, but our forecasting team think 29% of Americans over 14 used buy now, pay later last year. So 29%, only slightly more than the 27% of UK adults who used buy now, pay later at least once in the 6 months prior to January. That's according to the UK's Financial Conduct Authority. That's all we've got time for this episode. Thank you so much to my guests. Thank you to Karina.
Thanks, Marcus.
Thank you to Yuri.
Glad to be here.
And thank you to Victoria, who edits the show. James, who copy edits it. Stuart runs the team. Sophie, who does our social media. And thanks to everyone for listening in to the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Nielsen. You can tune in tomorrow to the Reimagining Retail Show with host Sarah Lebo as she speaks to Arzak Stambor and Becky Schilling all about Walmart.